and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 261. I'm your host, James Gilmore, and I'm so sorry we weren't here last week. So sorry. Joining me is Peter Wellington.
Hi, I'm also sorry.
Yes, we are both equally and consecutively sorry.
I was going to host. That's the thing. I was going to host. Oh, I was going to host a podcast, and I said all about it on Twitter, and then we didn't, and then I felt like a liar.
You welched on it. You lied. You built up our expectations only to smash them down.
I know. It was absolutely awful. And I thought, well, but maybe nobody will notice. But then we got a comment on the last podcast from Ooh Monkey. And they said, listening to the podcast is their Saturday morning routine. Oh. And then I felt, and I was just like, oh, no. So you know what? I remembered that there was the comment, and I thought to myself, well, I've got to say hello. So, Ooh Monkey, I hope you're enjoying your Saturday today.
And we are genuinely sorry.
And we are, yeah.
To explain a bit, I had big old tooth root canal type surgery and actually couldn't speak. I had it on the afternoon of the podcast, and I hoped it would be okay, because I'd had it before and it was all right. This time, actually half my face asleep, couldn't say, speaking like that, and it would have been a ridiculous podcast, and we couldn't get anyone to cover, so we're sorry. But it just means that this one's going to be even more packed, because we've got twice as much to cover. So let's start doing that right now. Some updates first. Assassin's Creed Pirates is currently a bit cheaper than usual. Currently, it's retailing for £1.99 or $2.99, which is down from, £3, £5, something like that. We quite liked it. It's a bit of fun, not to be taken too seriously. If you've got your way through Assassin's Creed 4 already and you really need something else to play, this might fill a gap. But don't expect it to be a serious game. It really isn't. But it's a bit cheaper right now. It should be still available for a while longer, but it's going to go back up in a little bit. So if you really wanted to grab it and were holding off because of the price, now is the time to grab it. Also, Touch Grind Skate 2 has got a brand new skate park.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. Which you sort of know already, because I fired this email over to you saying, Peter, look what's got a new skate park. And you're like, oh, don't tell me that.
It's like you're my dealer, and you're saying, "Hey, Pete, we've just got a brand new line of heroin here."
Yeah, I know. I did it with the glee that kind of message entails. So I just wanted to see you squirm, because you see, Peter has a problem regarding this game, in as much as if it's on his phone, he can't do anything productive. Yeah. As proved by a video that's just gone up on AppSpy, actually, in which you kind of walk us through the update and show us the new level, which is...
I skate us through it, James.
Oh, games. So you tell us all about it. It's called The Docks, right?
It is called The Docks, and it's the fourth skate park. It's always been there on the menu screen, taunting all of us skate fans, and it's only just been unlocked. And, maybe it was worth the wait, maybe it wasn't. I'm not 100% sure yet.
No, well, you can see some footage of Peter actually playing through it. Peter, who's actually quite good at this game. He does all the tricks.
All of them.
Yes, with his fingers.
Kickflips.
Yeah, them. Some bloke called Ollie.
Shove it.
He's good. Yeah. So all of those tricks. So you can get that right now. Is that a free update?
It certainly is.
Oh, fantastic. The best kind of update. So skater types, grab that right now. Now, we're going to bam through these things quite quickly, the first two anyway, because there's been a lot said about these two subjects in the past 2 weeks, and I don't want to reiterate stuff that's already been said. It's kind of pointless. But it would be remiss of us not to cover them at all. So, about that Dungeon Keeper then.
Yeah, it's not very good, is it?
Yeah. Well, so you guys all know this by now, I'm sure, if you've been reading the site or following. If you by any small chance haven't, EA released a version of Dungeon Keeper created by Mythic Entertainment. It was released as a free-to-play game, and there was a lot of kickback of people saying, hang on, this is pants. This is essentially not even a game. It's not free-to-play. It's free-to-wait. I just hit a block and try and build it, you know, get rid of it, which on the original game, you would just click away blocks to build your dungeon, expand your defenses, and then you could deal with attacks from incoming enemies and also go out and kick their asses too. In this new version, you would tap a block and a little wait timer would appear saying, maybe if you're lucky, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. You're like, all right, fine, fair enough. Tap another block, it would say 4 hours. You'd be like, okay. Tap another block and it would say one day. And you go, you know what? F*** off.
Mm.
And unsurprisingly, fans of the original were very displeased, and it, you know, caused a lot of fuss, and all Reddit got cross, and everyone got cross. Even proper proper news places, I should say. So, like, you know, the BBC covered it, and everyone. And Molyneux, who created the original game, Peter Molyneux, he actually called it ridiculous. He had a bit of a chat, and he's known for speaking fairly candidly about things. And he said, yeah, I thought it was quite ridiculous. Like, they just kind of lost the essence of the original. And what you end up with is a game that doesn't please the hardcore original fans, and one that also simultaneously upsets people who've never heard of the franchise, but maybe are reared on Clash of Clans and that sort of thing, who are finding it much more aggressively monetized than Clash of Clans and don't want to play it either.
So what do you think EA's play was on this one? Like,
Well, the way I figure it is that they want their own Clash of Clans.
Yeah,
they've got The Simpsons tapped out, which is obviously huge for them. They've got things like Real Racing 3, which they took what was a hardcore franchise and turned it into a freemium experience. So I think they went, we'll do that with this Dungeon Keeper property, and we can do two things simultaneously. We'll get the old fan base, because it was a fairly well-loved game. It was what a lot of Molyneux games are, beloved by the kind of the older crowd, the 20-somethings to 30-somethings. So we'll reel them in with the Dungeon Keeper name, and by making it a bit like Clash of Clans, we'll get that audience in as well, and hopefully it can be our super-powered franchise. Mm. Didn't work out that way, obviously, because they just upset both groups simultaneously.
It's an odd one, isn't it? It's like it doesn't go far enough in either direction. The only direction it sort of goes far enough in is trying to get your money. It isn't enough of a Clash of Clans clone to be interesting to that player base, and it's not Dungeon Keeper-y enough to keep the old fans happy. And admittedly, the old fans probably were never going to be happy in the first place, were they? let's be fair.
Unless it was a premium game and it had no monetization in it whatsoever.
I don't even think then you would keep that subset happy. I mean, it's been so long since Dungeon Keeper 2. You know, at this point, it would be like doing another Theme Hospital or another Shenmue or another...
I could see them revamping Theme Hospital. Not Shenmue, obviously, because that's ridiculous and will never happen. But I could see them doing Theme Hospital. I mean, for God's sake, they did The Sims and all that sort of stuff. And the theme games, there's just a bunch of roller coaster ones they've released recently as well from Frontier Developments, actually.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, when you take a really beloved franchise and people have got in their minds how that game used to be and how they, you know, all of that rose-tinted spectacles that we always talk about, how, you know, whenever you're wearing them and, when I was younger and I was playing these games, that sort of thing. When I was younger, I remember playing Carmageddon thinking it was a really good game.
Yeah, that doesn't stand up, does it?
Exactly, you know, and it's just... So I don't think people were ever going to be particularly happy about it. And good on EA for giving it to Mythic and saying, there you go, give it a shot, do something different. And at least they did do something different. It's just that they seem to have done a terrible thing.
Oh, actually, I don't know. I reckon there was external pressures. I don't reckon it was Mythic that came back with this game in this form. I reckon there were several boardroom discussions in which EA said, more of those payments, please, more like this, because that it is the EA-ification of games in this regard. They're not particularly good with the microtransactions at the moment. They don't...
They got Real Racing, right?
A lot of people think they didn't, though. A lot of people hate that series now because of what they did to it.
Yeah, I suppose. And, like, they didn't do Dead Space 3 very well either.
Nope. When they started including them in console games, as will be the case now. Everyone get used to that, by the way. If anyone's still kind of like, that was a one-off. Welcome to the world of mobile gaming. Yeah. It's coming to consoles and there's nothing you can do about it, at least for the time being. The only thing that will ever stop it happening is when it stops making money. And at the moment, it is the model that makes all of the money. So,
Do you know a model that doesn't make any money?
What's that, Peter?
Comparatively... advertising in mobile video games.
That's right. That rarely makes any money, does it?
Yeah. And what was the game... This is the best link ever. What was the game recently that made $50,000 a day?
From in-app advertising, that seems almost impossible. It would have to be an incredibly popular game to make that much cash. Oh, look. Flappy Bird. Okay, So, the other thing that we have to talk about is Flappy Bird. And I know you've already switched off the podcast at this point, and I'm talking to myself, because everyone is equally sick of hearing about this bloody game. But still, we're weighing in. And weirdly, as we speak now, the story is still alive. People keep adding things to it, and new revelations keep occurring. So, Flappy Bird appeared. You tap the screen, the bird flaps along, you get between a bunch of pipes, try and get through as many as possible. That's it. That's the whole game. Nothing else. It's basically a mini game. But it completely took over for the past like week and a half. It was released back in March last year, so it's been floating around in the App Store for ages, but it suddenly came to prominence over the past couple of weeks. Some people are saying it was because of a PewDiePie video, and that's why it kind of went mental and went global. Other people were looking into it and going, the way this has gotten to the top of the App Store seems suspicious. And there are all these, you know, allegations surrounding maybe bot farming and artificially pushing it up the top of the charts to get more visibility. So there was a lot of speculation to why, regardless of how it got there, once it got there, it became a phenomenon. And everyone and your mum was playing it. Whether it was a good thing or a bad thing remains to be seen. I played it, and I played it a bunch because I was doing videos for it and stuff, but I have no objection to it, like, at all. People got
It's fine.
People got all snooty about it. Like, it's not a proper game.
I heard one person, and I won't name them by name because I'm sure they wouldn't like it. And I'm calling them out, but sort of. But I do like them, I should say. So if they figure it out, who it is that I'm talking about? Anyway, but one person said, Flappy Bird. I guess Nintendo's got a whole bunch to worry about at the moment. I just thought, come on, like, it's not, and I said as much, you know, it's not the same thing. It's a different kind of experience, you know. It's just a really simple pass the time casual game, and people got so upset about it.
Well, yeah, it was an outrage that people get when they look at it and go, that's not a proper game, and how dare it be there, whilst the millions and millions and millions of people were playing it. The same reason people get so cross over the freemium model and say, like, it's obviously awful and Clash of Clans is obviously rubbish or whatever, but millions upon millions of people are playing it, so obviously it's hitting a note with these people. I personally think Transformers is god awful.
What do you mean, the movies or the TV series?
Oh, the movies. Sorry, okay, the movies. Fine. I should specify a little closer before
all
the flame in my face. But, yeah, no, I personally think those Michael Bay movies are atrocities, especially the last two. But the franchise has made well over $1 billion. So, obviously, I'm technically in the minority compared to moviegoers. I can say they're trash all I want, but people continue to pay money to go and see those films. Ergo, Transformers 4. So you can't really complain too much about it. And in the case of Flappy Birds, yes, it was dirt simple, and yes, it could be considered one mini game out of like a WarioWare game or something like that. But everyone was playing it. Man, woman, child, Iguanodon, doesn't matter. They were all tapping away. The conflict came obviously when it got pulled down deliberately by the app's own creator. Dong Nguyen, I think his name is. Difficult to pronounce the second one. Sorry if I get it wrong. But he pulled it down. And the reason he gave was somewhat unusual. People were saying, well, it's because Nintendo were applying legal pressure. That's what they were saying. Because assets in the game, things like the pipes between which the bird is flapping, look very much like the pipes out of Mario. And so did the ground, and so did other art assets. So people are saying, oh, okay, you've clearly lifted assets here, and Nintendo are about to sue you. Nintendo denied this, incidentally, which is something Nintendo never do. Their PR team actually said something in reaction to a news story, which never happens.
No.
But they said, no, nothing like that, it'd be silly. And he himself says, nope, nothing to do with legal pressures. The reason he gave was that he had noticed that the app had become, quote, addictive. And he's pulled it because it was becoming, in his view, again, quote, a problem.
Yeah. Have you been keeping up with the number of horrible, horrible people that basically just send him death threats via Twitter?
Yes. That was the other consideration. I mean, whilst he said that was the reason, addiction, that seems a peculiar one.
I think the addiction thing is incorrect. I think,
yeah.
You know, he's made a game that the payment model for it, you know, the way that he makes money is people playing it over and over and over again. You know, he's specifically designed a game to play like that. And clearly something has sort of boosted this position, whether or not it's PewDiePie or whether or not it's something a little bit more cheeky.
Mm.
So obviously he wanted to make money out of it. I just get the feeling that he didn't want a whole bunch of horrible, horrible people on Twitter getting in touch with him saying how the game has ruined their lives and
yeah.
like they're obsessing over it. It's, you know, it's...
He was getting, like you said, death threats. And this comes with any kind of like internet fame tends to lead to people attacking you via Twitter. And that's to be expected. But I, given the small scale of the game and the fact that he claims to have made it over a period of like 3 evenings and that was it, and it was just a test app and he released it ages ago, for it to suddenly blow up in this way, generate this amount of attention and ire, both from fans and from the media. Because this wasn't just fans going, hey, this game's rubbish or you're doing this and that. It was all of the gaming press. And again, like with the Molyneux thing, the Dungeon Keeper experience, the mainstream press, this was the Guardian turning around and saying, this Flappy Birds looks a bit like Mario. I'm not sure that was a quote from the Guardian, but you know, the mainstream press were questioning the legitimacy of the game and, you know, raising some legal questions regarding things like its assets. So the attention was astonishing, and for whatever reason he decided to pull it down. Now it isn't going to come back to the App Store. A billion clones have appeared in its place, obviously,
mm-hmm.
As they did while the game was inactive, so you can play variations of it. If you really loved the game and you happen to have downloaded it already, fine. If you want to hold on to it, because if you update the App Store, you know, you can lose it, technically, because it's now vanished. There's actually a guide, which we've bumped up on Pocket Gamer, to show you how you can keep old games that have been removed. So if you want to hang on to it, by all means, go and use that. Don't go and spend £60,000 on an iPhone from eBay with one pre-installed, because A, don't be stupid.
Don't be that guy.
That's really stupid. And B, you can't now, because in reaction to this, eBay has turned around and said, any phones that are sold on eBay have to be reset to factory settings.
Huh.
Specifically to prevent this kind of thing from happening.
Interesting.
Yeah, so yeah, that was the last 2 weeks, basically, in summation. So that's what you missed. Now, let's move on to fresh things, new things, exciting things. First of all, Borderlands 2 is coming to Vita, which will excite you, maybe, because you have one.
Mm-hmm.
And Keith, but then this totally isn't Keith's kind of game, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's a first-person shooter / RPG.
Yes, and that's not going to float his boat. Keith, incidentally, speaking of floating boats...
Where is he?
...has sailed across the seas. He probably flew, but for the sake of this, I'm saying he sailed. He's over in Amsterdam doing Amsterdam things. I think it's Mobile Connect or Games Connection or something.
I think it's Casual Connect, yeah.
Yeah, one of the Connects. Basically, it's a gaming conference, and he's over there talking to Peter Molyneux, I think. There are interviews appearing on the site that look like they come from him.
What do you imagine Peter Molyneux saying?
Oh,
he's saying.
I bet he's created the best game ever.
Well, Godus is just an amazing game, and I've revolutionised free to play.
He has revolutionised. That's what he's saying at the moment. He's saying he's doing free to play in a way that no one's ever done free to play. Well, jokes.
We
have a laugh, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's not saying that. But he is saying, as usual, he's revolutionising things because he's Peter Molyneux. And frankly, I'd be disappointed if he didn't.
Yeah, do you know what? I love him for it. I love him for it so much.
That's
whenever
what he's
he says,
there for.
Oh, I'm doing this brand new thing you've never heard of. Of course you are.
Of course you are, Peter. Fantastic. And you'll deliver on approximately 30% of what you say and then switch focus to the next project because you're a bit like a magpie in that regard. A big, baldy magpie. good on him, though. I like that. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, Borderlands 2 is coming to Vita. Apparently, it's also coming with all of the DLC, like 6 different DLC packs that I assume, you know, were released on console as well. So you're going to be able to play that on your Vita. Not only that, it'll support the cross-saving feature, so you can save on your Vita and then carry on playing on your PS3 if you've downloaded it via the PSN, something like that. So that's kind of nice. And you can play with up to 3 other players. You'll get the 4-player facility as well. So it's the full Borderlands 2 experience.
That'll be a really big download for those small, very expensive memory cards.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that. Yeah. But then, you know, you can download it on your sexy new Vita Slim, can't you?
Yeah.
With its 1 gig memory card that it comes with, or gig internal, it comes with a bit of flash memory or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
We reviewed it quite poorly, did you see?
It got like a C?
Yeah, yeah. Mark said, like, yes, it's smaller and it's lighter and all of these things, but ultimately the loss of the screen was too great to rate it highly. That's what he said. I haven't played it. I haven't got hands on. I don't know. But Mark was not impressed. And certainly there's no reason, he thinks, for anyone to upgrade to it, because technically he considers it a downgrade. So, but these are the kind of games really that should be on the Vita. And I know probably people think the opposite at this point, because everyone now considers the Vita like an indie haven or something. Apart from things like Tearaway and AAA games that are appearing on it, people are going, oh, it's going to be the year of the Vita in which all the indie games and Thomas Was Alone appears on everything. Which is great that you have these indie games with very lo-fi graphics, but that's not what the Vita was sold to us as. No, that's not what it...
Like, I got them all in a humble bundle anyway. So.
Well, exactly. Like, that's what you can do. You can do that on your phone, or you can do that on your 3DS. You can do that on any kind of retro-looking console. The whole point of the Vita was it's like next-gen gaming in your hands. Mm. That's what it was sold to us as. And the launch titles were all like, have Uncharted and have a new Wipeout and have everything that's kind of like, bam, bam, brand new. And then they're trying to sell it as like this £200 piece of super high quality gear with all of the processors inside it, and saying, yeah, but you can play this cute little retro pixel art game that you download that's about 16 meg. Like, that's not why I got it, dude.
No, but then, I mean, it can have both, can't it? I mean, admittedly, there isn't. A huge amount of the AAA stuff at the moment. Like, there's not tons and tons and tons of, or not tons of stuff that is really of note. There's a lot of Japanese sort of AAA stuff coming out. Maybe kind of B tier kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that kind of tier that Japan
Dynasty
does
Warriors.
So well. Yeah, Dynasty. That's it. Dynasty Warriors tier level of good, and certainly has an audience and looks really nice, but not quite Killzone. Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff, but I don't know. It does both well. It does both really well. So I'm happy to, you know, continue playing Wipeout and all of these lovely AAA games that come out. But I like these little, like Proteus. Do you know, you can get Proteus on Vita? When that thing came out, I never thought, oh yeah, this weird ultra lo-fi Atari looking first person walk 'em up was going to come to this
walk 'em up.
I like that. You know, like. And I think it's good. I think it's very good.
No, I'm quite happy for there to be these indie games on there. I just do think it's been a bit stingy in regards to fulfilling its promise for next-gen gaming. But Borderlands 2 is a great example. It's just a shame it's come so late. At this point, everyone's played Borderlands 2. Like, if you can do the dual launch, if you can do the day-and-date thing, as, like, it comes out for PS3 and for Vita at the same time, which is totally what they should be doing in the future with the PS4, incidentally. Actually, did you see this stat that 60% of people who got a PS4 also have a Vita?
Do you think that's a surprising stat?
No. And people were reacting surprisingly to it, but that makes total sense, because the kind of person who would buy a PS4 on launch day, like, when there were no games to play on it, is exactly the kind of person who likes to acquire brand new shiny hardware. That's exactly the person that buys the Vita. Probably
a Sony fan.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone was kind of surprised. But with that stat, that's exactly what Sony should be capitalizing on. Because if they want them to work together, if they're going to support this second screen, we talked about it a bit a couple of weeks ago, that's exactly what they should be doing. Making sure that everyone who has a PS4 also has a Vita. Mm. And they can do all this cross-promotion stuff, and they can use games which work on both platforms and do streaming from the PS4 to the Vita and all that. That's exactly what they need to do. Get that Vita down to, that new Vita down to 120 quid or something, 100 quid, and bundle it with PS4s. Mm-hmm. And that's the way to do it. It's like the way that Microsoft bundles bloody Kinect. Bundle a PS Vita in there. That's totally the way. On to mobile news. We'll do two quick things here. There's a new Angry Birds game coming out this autumn, and already Peter is suffering from apathy.
Now, Angry Birds, fine. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm totally cool with there being another Angry Birds game. I probably
That's
play
good.
It and go,
fine. I'll tell Rovio.
Yeah, good. Good.
Peter gives the thumbs up. It's all clear, guys. Carry on.
I know that they were really worried that I wasn't going to play it, but...
They sure were.
That's fine, but... Okay, so this is called... What is it called?
It's called Angry Birds Stella.
Right, okay.
Which
okay.
is not a reference to a game in which you lob beer cans at birds, which was, you know, a possibility, because I done new research, and it turns out that the pink bird is called Stella from the original Angry Birds. So that she was called Stella, and this is her story from what we can gather. Now, it appears to be that Rovio is going for the female market with this one.
Oh, yeah.
quite conspicuously and quite obviously. So I'm going to quote here from the Rovio blog press release thing. Angry Birds Stella is breaking the mold by introducing strong, passionate characters who really stand for something, while adding plenty of action and reality into the mix.
Yep.
So it's got a picture which actually looks brilliant, to be fair. Like, the art that they've released for it is really, really nice. I'm really impressed with the look of it. I think they've had a go with it in Angry Birds Go. That looked really good. That was kind of a step in a different direction for them. And it seems that they're continuing down that route with this promo release. Whether the game looks like this is remains to be seen. But the promo art's very nice. Just a bunch of birds sitting on a tree with an evil queen-looking bird. You know, I'm thinking Sleeping Beauty. I'm thinking Maleficent, only in bird form, hovering on the horizon there. The thing is, we're very unsure what this game is going to be. They've been deliberately vague about it. In fact, one of the quotes, I haven't got it here, but like they said, just because she's pink,
yep,
doesn't mean she's not feisty and powerful.
That is why I hate this announcement so much.
Yeah.
Because it's so see-through.
It's see-through. And like, how condescending do you want to be?
It's so... Just because she's pink, like,
which is essentially saying just because she's a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's pink is basically a synonym for girl in that sentence, as far as I read it. And it does seem terribly patronizing.
It does, doesn't it? Like it seems like Spice Girls era feminism, like that sort of we can do it. Like, and it's just like, of course you can. Of course you can do it. You don't need a stupid video game to it's so annoying. Like, the way that this is worded, it's massively condescending. B, it's got literally, like, I can't think of a game in which her gender is going to be an issue.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a standard Angry Birds game and it's just got a different set of characters and the lead is Stella, then this is a really horrible step forward. Sideways step, I suppose. Because it's trying to make a gender issue out of something that isn't a gender issue. Like, Angry Birds is played by women and it's played by men. There isn't something that says, oh, it's a testosterone-fueled PvP. And there isn't something that says that it's a candy haircut saga or something I would play, you know. Like, it's not...
Sure.
Either of those extremes and either of those stereotypes, it's a game in which you fling birds at pigs. You know, there's no gender thing here, and them sort of making something out of it, it feels like Rovio trying to initially court the press, like, oh, look at how, like, forward thinking we are.
Well I've got theories on this, right? So, from the way this is worded, again, I'll quote a little bit from the press release, will be taken to parts of the Angry Birds world we've never seen before. And it's all about inspiration, empowerment, and other real issues. Okay. So, the way I took this is, and the way the press release is worded, and the clear, like, slant towards pushing this towards girls, this sounds like an episode of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. Okay, and bear with me here, because I do know something about this, to my f***ing shame, because my girlfriend watches it completely unironically, I might add. So I have been in the house when this is going on. Underneath the image of Angry Birds Stella, the one PR image they've released, it says, best friends forever, most of the time. This whole friendship is magic hook, which they keep pushing in the blog thing as well, it sounds like they're trying to build something that's a bit like that. Now, and they keep throwing around the term adventure, so we don't know what the gameplay is going to be like. It could be that they're doing some kind of RPG thing and it's going to be an adventure. We don't really know yet. But the important thing of this all is, by skewing the game towards women, that's one thing. However, as we know, Rovio makes most of its dollar now from merchandising. I think the stat is about, like, between 14%, I might be even more, it might be the other way around, like 60%, of its revenue from the last year came from merch, not from the games. So that's what's making all the cash. And I don't know who's buying the Angry Birds stuff, whether boys are more into buying the Angry Birds plushies or girls or whatever, but when it comes to merchandise, people do target merch at demographics. Almost more so than things like, I don't know, cars or games or whatever. They will be making, and they've said in the press release, there is going to be accompanying games and toys and plushies and all that kind of stuff. That's what I reckon this is about. I reckon they want to make a whole bunch of girl-flavoured toys and stuff to go with this, and then make tons of cash, hopefully, off people, because I imagine they've seen the merch from, again, My Little Pony flying off the shelves. I reckon that's what this is about. I reckon it's all about the merchandise this time.
Now I almost feel like we've had this conversation in a bit of a heat. I feel like maybe we should justify some of our points and say we aren't saying girls as in all women. We're saying young girls, aren't we?
This is clearly skewed towards a younger audience with the kind of princess angle.
The females. Who?
No, again, when I'm talking about aiming for a girl market and all this kind of stuff, this is what they are clearly going for. This is the way they have framed this. Yeah. Like, the toy thing, the way that the PR release is worded, you can read it on the site, incidentally, and the whole, you know, they may be pink. Oh,
they may be pink.
But they're still, like, they can still speak and have thoughts. Oh, it just comes over, it's like, ooh, this is clearly what they're going for.
This would have been forward-thinking 10 years ago.
It just seems like they're a bit late to the game on it. Now, like I say, positively, the art looks very nice. Negatively, mm-hmm. we don't know anything about it. Nothing. It's a lot of fluff talked about issues.
At least with, like, Angry Birds Go, we had some sort of vague idea that it would be a racer.
Yeah. But that's kind of it here. So, at the moment, it's a bit of a nothing, other than the fact that it is clearly angled towards girls, which is a shame, because if this wasn't an issue, they wouldn't have... A, made a game deliberately comprising all female characters, and B, made such a noise about it in the press release. They could have just, like, made a game that has adventure and has issues and have everything in it, and happens to have a girl cast or a boy cast or a mixture of both. Doesn't matter. But they've made such a song and dance about it that you kind of can't ignore it.
We're still in this awkward phase of games at the moment, aren't we, where having a message in a video game has to be very deliberately a message.
They're going to trumpet it and make sure everybody knows. I reckon there's going to be a slightly ambiguous rape scene. Because that's what happens nowadays. Whenever they do games with female protagonists that are about issues and empowerment, people find a video 2 or 3 months before it's released in which there's a violent confrontation and someone calls rape. That's what's going to happen.
Have you ever looked... Actually, that may well be true. Have you ever looked up what ducks get up to in terms of intercourse?
Oh, I have. That's only a short jump up the food chain to birds there.
Isn't it? So maybe there is some... Maybe what this is a... it's a story about sort of sexual aggression towards women played out through birds and... They're kind of looking upon ducks. They sort of like, maybe I was that duck. Maybe I was getting a corkscrew penis inside me.
I'm so getting that plushie. Okay, so that was nice and controversial. Moving on to something less so. Quickly, before we do the out and about bit, Boom Beach is coming, which is the next thing to come from Supercell of Clash of Clans. Fame. This is their follow-up. Now, currently, Supercell only has 2 games, which is that Hey game. Hey there. Hey, sheep. Sheep,
Supercell, hey. 2 games.
Yeah. They've got Hey something.
Hey Day.
That's the one. And they've got Clash of Clans.
That true?
Yeah, they're a 2 game studio. That's it. Hey Day did very, very well, and then Clash of Clans just took over the world. Yeah. And that's it. If you go to their like site, those are the only 2 things that are on it. And it's quite a sort of low-key site as well. And they don't have a YouTube channel, so they don't put up official trailers. It's really, like, bizarrely minimal, their thing, because they don't have to, I reckon. It just, like, there's no need for them to have all that stuff, because everyone's playing Clash of Clans already. So it doesn't matter.
They did have a game beforehand. It's they've only had 2 mobile games so far. They had a game beforehand. They used to do social games on web.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you can't find any record of Gunshine.net.
that has been scrubbed from the internet's collective history. Oh, well. Well, they're releasing the follow-up to Clash of Clans, kind of a spiritual successor rather than a sequel or anything. It's called Boom Beach, and it does look an awful lot like Clash of Clans, only it's got water in it. So it's a military thing where you're building bases on the beach and people are coming and attacking you from the sea and from the land and you're doing vice versa. Mark's gone hands on with it and says, yep, looks quite a lot like Clash of Clans, really. So it's got a bunch of in-game currencies. It's an isometric top-down thing. You're building bases. There are wait timers. You're farming gems. In this case, instead of kind of, you know, Viking-esque looking soldiers and stuff like you have in Clash of Clans and gods coming down and whatnot, in this case, you're dealing with military types. So you're building boats and you're you know, summoning generals and folks in uniform. But that's sort of the main difference. The main difference appears to be aesthetic. Again, that's not surprising, given how successful the Clash of Clans model's been. They wouldn't really want to change it a lot, I guess. They want to stick pretty close. They're insisting that, oh no, it's very different, and it's got completely different combat mechanics and all that sort of stuff. Mark's Hands-On, which you can find on the site, says, it's still quite similar. There are differences, obviously. It's not a complete, like, reskin. But there are enough similarities to say, yeah, it's quite similar.
It's worrying, isn't it, when one of the world's leading mobile companies thinks, right, for our next game, oh god, how do we change the genre that we made?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, they would in some ways be stupid to push out and do something completely different. I'd like to see them do that, but their entire financial department would be screaming, no,
yeah, please don't.
Clash of Clans 2, please don't be stupid. So it's, I think it's out in New Zealand in a beta mode, I think I'm going to say that's true. We can't get it yet. We're not 100% sure when it's going to turn up. But like I say, there's a preview on the site. Oh, no, wait, it's coming in March. I'm completely lying. Yeah, live in iOS in March. We don't have a specific date yet, but it will be appearing next month. So you can try it for yourself. I predict it won't be as successful.
No.
For I am Nostradamus.
Yeah.
And yeah, Sight Beyond Sight over here says it probably won't be as successful.
It will go number one on the App Store for a month. And then it will just kind of gradually go into the top 50.
And people will carry on playing Clash of Clans.
Yeah, probably. Because that's where that community is.
Yes, indeedy. Oh, well. Out and about this week, or should I say this fortnight, because we're going to pick up on some of the games, the good ones that came out last week as well as the ones that came out this week. Has been a bit of a quiet 7 days for this week, but last week there were some crackers, so we'll bring you the best of both, starting off with Threes, which is a puzzle game in which you move around numbered cards on a 4x4 grid and attempt to combine like numbered cards to make bigger numbers and increase your score. Everyone in the office has massively taken to this game, apart from Harry, who reviewed it. Still gave it a good mark, gave it a 7 out of 10, but everyone else has completely fallen in love with it and says it's the best thing ever. While Harry said, yeah, it's pretty good, it's all right. But it's not all that.
He's a grump.
Well, as far as this game is concerned, he is, because everyone else was going, are you mad, man? 9 out of 10. But he said no. So there you go. But I've played it. I played it for the video review. It is good. It's a simple mechanic game, but it's one of those ones that's immediately easy to understand and then becomes compulsive in terms of, oh, I've got to beat my high score. That's all it is. The game is essentially the same every time. There's no differences. The grid doesn't get bigger. It's always 4x4, and every time you flick the screen, it moves every card over to the left or right or whichever direction you flick it. And if there happen to be two number three cards next to each other and you move it left, then they'll combine and become a six card. That will then free up another space on the grid, and another card will appear. That happens every time you move left or right and you combine one, until all the grid's filled up and the game stops, you die, and it tots up all the points. If you like those kind of time-wasty puzzle games in which you're just trying to build a score, it's the same mechanic, you know, Flappy Birds, it's the same mechanic over and over again, you're just trying to improve every time. There aren't levels or anything like that. This is a really, really good example of it. It's fun, it's easy to understand, It's the perfect kind of tube game or bus game or something like that, where you're just like, oh, I'll just sit down, play it 5-10 minutes, beat my next score. Nicely done, smart. It's even got some character as well. The cards have little personalities. So they've got little tiny little faces, like emoticon faces at the bottom. And whenever you get a new score, like, for example, when you get a 48 card for the first time, you combine 24 and 24 and you get 48, it introduces you to the 48 card.
Oh.
He's got a little name and a little character, and there's a little ticker tape explosion and stuff like that. So it's got character as well. So yeah, highly recommended. Go and have a look at Threes. £1.49 or $1.99. That came out last week, along with Ellis Infinity. Have you seen this one, Peter?
Is this just Ellis but hyped up?
Well, people were saying that. Like, I've seen people saying, is this the same game that came before? Because we've seen this. I'm not familiar with the original one, if it is. It's a game in which there are circles on the screen and you have to push them into black holes.
Yeah.
So it is. So this has existed before then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Right, well, yeah, in that case, it's a retread of an existing game, or a sequel to, perhaps. 2009, the original came out, apparently, an early indie favourite on the App Store. And now what they've done is basically done it with same idea, the original puzzler, but also it has an endless mode and a tutorial as well. I've played this today. It is really good. It's one of those ones that you want to play, to some degree, almost with an iPad, with both hands. Because you're presented with a space background, circles kind of blip into existence, and then corresponding black holes open up. They look like kind of flowers almost, with petals reaching out around the circumference with dots on the end. And what you have to do is match up the right sized circle with the appropriately sized black hole. Thing is, numerous different circles appear, all different colours. And if two different coloured circles touch, they start to drain each other and you lose energy. Problem is, they keep appearing, and so quickly the screen starts becoming full, and you have to move them all around to get them out of the way of one another. If you want to kind of stop there being 10 billion on screen, you can push them together, push like coloured circles together, and they'll merge to create one big one, which makes them easier to manage. However, if you want to then put those circles into a smaller hole, you have to put both fingers on it and pull them apart again. So it's all about managing the space you've got. And it's, again, easy to pick up, nice and compulsive. It's simply presented. You get obstacles, swirly things start appearing, like kind of space tornadoes that will suck the circles towards them. So you have to keep grabbing them and pulling them back from the edge. So it's one of those things, like I say, iPad on the table, both hands, all your fingers, if possible. Because you can really, like, and if you watch the video, it's quite cool. I put one up on AppSpy. And to watch back, it's really interesting because it looks like there are 12 people playing it. Because all these circles are moving, and you realize it's because you're using like four or five fingers, you're using your thumbs and all the rest of them, to manage them, to stop them running into each other and draining your energy and killing you. We really like it at the office. I think it got a very good rating from our review. It's £1.99, $2.99, and yeah, Ellis Infinity, this version is called. Also, the big release that was last week that I suppose we should talk about. Actually, it was probably... We were talking about it before, Final Fantasy VI, that is. And it had actually come out on Android, but it wasn't out on iOS yet. It's out now. You've been playing it, haven't you, Peter?
I have.
And it's what do you reckon?
Fine. Yeah, it's not the Final Fantasy VI that you want if you've played Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy III, if you're from America.
Okay.
If you've played it before, then... this version's all right, but first of all, you've got to play it with an iPad because the menus are fiddly.
It's those scrolling menus, isn't it? That's really weird. I saw that on your video.
It's horrible, and it looks... It handles grim, and considering it's not turn-based, it's like a lot of people get wrong about Final Fantasy battles. It's active time.
Yes. Well, so, you can switch that on and off, though, can't you?
I don't... Not in... Six, I don't think.
Really? Oh, I forget. But yes, it's turn-based in as much as your kind of energy bar charges, and then you can make an attack. But yes,
yeah.
If you just sit there doing nothing, they will keep attacking.
They will just keep on attacking you. And considering like it's so fiddly to choose all these different things, and you've got to... So you'll have like attack items, defend Magitek and all that sort of thing. And you'll scroll through these things, and you go, oh, I want a potion. Scroll, items, scroll, potion, scroll, target. Tap like yeah. And it should just be up, down, A, B, it should just be really, really quick, and that's not very good. And we've talked about the art before on a previous podcast. It's fine if you haven't played Final Fantasy VI before, like it's not going to put you off enough, but if you have, then it just feels like a game that's been made in an RPG maker. It feels like a fan game. Basically what Square Enix has done is they've tinkered with a classic.
And that's always, as we've proved so far this podcast, Dungeon Keeper, going to annoy a whole bunch of people. However, always. Matt Dina, who reviewed it, actually, and he is something of an expert. He completed the game like 10 times on about 12 different formats, which is, I know, mathematically impossible. That's how committed he is to Final Fantasy VI. And he gave it an 8 out of 10, saying, yep, we've got some issues. There's some issues with the new translation, where there are some, it sounds a bit weird, and there's even a spelling mistake, which is... very poor show. And there's some additional content from the 2006 remake. But yeah, those new characters look a bit weird and those menus. But 8 out of 10, and if you've never played it, play it, because it is one of the best RPGs around.
It is.
It's a bit of a cracker. However, it's going to cost you £10.99 or $15.99, which will come as no surprise to anyone who knows anything about Square Enix and mobile.
Little tip, if you have a Vita or a PSP,
yes,
and you don't mind playing the original version,
which you shouldn't,
to be fair,
because it's great,
then you can download it on that for less money.
There you go. Top tip on this mobile podcast is don't get it on your iPhone. But you can, and you know, go for it. Final Fantasy VI. Another classic game that's been rebooted or revamped or reissued or whatever you want to call it at this point, R-Type 2 is back. It's got new difficulty settings, it's got leaderboards, and it's got that mode which makes it look old. Old mode, I think they call it.
Yeah, old mode. Thank goodness for old mode.
Complete with scan lines, and I don't know if they've got slowdown, authentic slowdown, I'm not sure. But they re-released R-Type last year. It was, you know, a faithful re-release. I reviewed it, I think, was R-Type, but we always have that issue with the touch controls, where you have to use, I think in this one, I forget if it's one-to-one or whether there's a virtual stick. Either way, it doesn't feel quite right.
There's both in R-Type 2.
Yes, okay, they've added both this time. And bullet hell shmups have problems in this area. I mean, this is less bullet hell, I suppose, but definitely these shmups where precision is key, like pinpoint precision is key. And when you're used to controlling it one way, it's a bit difficult. And especially with these things where you have to obscure areas of the screen.
Oh, gosh.
When there are enemies, because with shmups especially, you'll have that situation where you've moved to the front of the screen or the middle of the screen, and enemies are now behind you. Mm. And you have to account for that. Not that they're shooting at you, but they're there. They're traveling, and you don't want to crash into one. So that thing where you're putting your finger and covering up half of the screen is a much bigger issue with these kind of games. So they can suffer a bit in translation. We haven't reviewed it yet, but the review will be up soon. It does support the iOS 7 controllers, those new ones that have been released. So if you want to play it that way, you can go right ahead. It costs £1.49 or $1.99. What else can we do? There's Stubbies, which is a sort of cutesy-looking game in which these jelly bean-type people are wandering up and down the screen, like on left and right axes. X and Y axes, I should probably say. And you have to direct them towards one another. You flick the screen, and they'll change direction 90 degrees and wander into one another and kind of absorb each other. But that'll only work if they're the same color. So you have to avoid them crashing into each other. Obstacles will pop up, all that sort of thing. It's out in the New Zealand App Store right now on Thursday as we speak. It should be out right now in the UK. It's 69p or 99 cents. So it's cutesy. The art style is very smart. I don't know how much of a game there is. A review will probably be coming.
Yeah.
Have you played it?
If you like action puzzlers like Choo Choo Rocket, this will be right up your street.
Ah, okay. Good to know. Oh, yeah, of course, putting the arrows on the floor to direct the mice and all that. Mm. Or the cat. I forget which way around it is. The other one that you've played is Super Obstacle Boy.
Yeah.
Which is, from what I can tell, a platformer.
I don't know what to make of it at times, which is troubling, because it feels like it's trying to be Super Meat Boy.
Right.
Like, a lot. To the point of there's an opening introduction where a white, admittedly, square is chatting away with a pink square, and then a black square comes in and breaks them up and kidnaps the pink square, and you have to rescue the pink square.
Oh, right.
And it's like, and it's really hard, like Super Meat Boy. It doesn't control, like, SMB. It feels a little bit like the bonus stages of Super Meat Boy, like the 8-bit world or whatever it was called that you would go into, the crazy hardcore NES levels that you would kind of go through. But yeah, it's a single screen hardcore platformer that will just test you. Like R-Type 2, but in a different way, the controls don't quite hold up. And considering it's a game about control finesse, when you find that for some reason, the right button sticks.
Okay.
So you're constantly running right.
Oh, right. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
And it's like,
Well, control finesse is precisely the reason there is no Super Meat Boy on mobile. That's why, that's the argument they always gave. They were very snotty about the whole mobile translation. Like, is it going to come to iOS? And they're like, iOS, whatevs. What?
Mobiles?
Yeah, because of the control issue. And to be fair, like, they're right in a lot of cases. People have a good deal of trouble making platformers work on iOS properly. There have been a couple of good examples. Shadowblade was good recently. And obviously a lot of the Ravenous Games games, League of Evil, we always reference as a good example. But they are tough to do, especially for something that is so, again, pinpoint accuracy is what is required for Super Meat Boy and that lot. So, yeah, I'm not surprised it has control issues. But you can get it right now, I believe. It costs £1.99 or $2.99. But like we say, it's tough. If you can't get past the first level, then don't blame us. Come sit upon my throne of games. And we're back in the throne of games. Just the two of us this week, so we're going to have to huddle together for warmth. I'm sure you won't mind that, will you, Peter? Good, glad to hear it. You can get up first and talk about...
TXK.
Are those letters?
Those are letters that, when combined, form the latest smash indie hit for your Vita. It's from Jeff Minter.
Oh, he of lots of llamas fame.
Yeah, LlamaSoft. So if you don't know who Jeff Minter is, then first of all, you can probably skip ahead about 5 minutes because I don't think you'll be interested in TXK. if you do know who Jeff Minter is, then you can also probably skip forward 5 minutes because you should buy this game.
Okay.
Basically, he made Tempest. That's his biggest claim to fame, I believe.
And all the Vs.
The Vs?
Was that him? I always forget.
V-V-V-V-V-V. That was Terry Kavanagh.
Oh, of course. Ah, yeah. See, these indie hardcores, I get confused.
But Terry Kavanagh, in some ways, not in terms of personality, but definitely in terms of kind of video game aesthetic at times. He's kind of like a spiritual successor. He's kind of like the evolution of Jeff Minter. But
it's from the same wheelhouse, isn't it? Yeah.
That sort of thing. Like, both of them are auteurs who believe it should be about purity of gameplay and that you should be able to take a simple experience and expand upon it and make it really exciting, this one core idea.
Mm.
And so Minter went away for a bit and started a llama farm, I want to say.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think he went off and...
I wouldn't put it past him.
No. Like, and he was a real, like, in the 80s, like, 70s and 80s, he was a real... People were writing about him in, like, old, you know, 400, 500-page monthly PC mags talking about, you know, Jeff Minter being this superstar, you know, in the same vein as, you know, a Charles Cecil or a Peter Molyneux.
Yeah.
And now he's kind of back with TXK, or back in a big way, I should say, with TXK, which is a spiritual successor, but not a direct successor to Tempest and Tempest 2000 and that Tempest that was on the new one. Remember the new one?
Nope.
It was a DVD player that was also a video game console.
It
sold 1,000 units or something ridiculous like that. but everyone who bought Tempest.
Okay.
So TXK is a game in which you fly around the top of a web meshing and you shoot down towards... the bottom of this meshing, and coming up towards you are enemies. They're kind of just geometric elements.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the game is built out of... Is it raster lines or... what does Vectrex work on?
I've got no idea.
It looks like lasers.
Yeah, that's better. Say it the ways I can understand, Peter. Thank you.
Like the little... Basically, little neon-coloured lines. And,
gotcha.
They come up towards you, and you have to shoot at them. It's a shooter. You know, it's a... Tempest would inspire a whole bunch of other shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of going back to the well with this one and come up with a classic, but a classic for people who want Tempest again. It is really frenetic. It's psychedelic as all heck.
Which is to be expected from...
Yeah, it is Minter. Absolutely to be expected. He's like Alan Moore. He's like the big bearded British man who makes weird, trippy games. And... The soundtrack is this strange combination of slightly old EDM soundtrack, like old sounding EDM. I think it's an original score.
Okay.
And then meshed with a soundtrack databank that is half stolen from Robotron and previous games that he's worked on, or other games that he's worked on, and then new retro sounding, like that sort of Star Wars arcade.
Horrible the crunchy
digitized
noises.
Yeah, the crunchy digitized noises that are really evocative of a certain period. It's filled with that, but it's got online leaderboards, so you know you can whip through the... I think there's like 100 levels or something like that.
Okay.
And like you know, play your friends for leadership leaderboard places, and it's incredibly competitive. Even now, it's only been out a day.
Does it handle well on the Vita? Is there any touchscreen nonsense incorporated?
There's some touchscreen nonsense incorporated in which there's a smart bomb which you tap on the screen and you'll blow up all of your enemies. And actually, it's quite satisfying to go.
Do you make that noise when you do?
I actually do. The analog stick works fine, but I tend to use the digital pads because it gives you a slightly more kind of precision.
Okay.
It isn't a game that's very friendly. It's not immediately obvious why you're overshooting your target.
Okay.
So you will like zip past it too quickly, and you'll think, well, this sucks. Like I should be able to get to it. It's too sensitive. But if you start working with it, we always come back to this example, but if you like a Dark Souls, if you work within its confines and you start using this thing called lean, which is you hold the L button and you tap to left or right, you find there's a surprising amount of finesse within that twitchiness, and it works surprisingly well for such a frenetic arcade game. If you've been following the game, it's the game you should get. It's really strange. Like, if that sounds interesting to you, you should get it. If that sounds really boring, you really nothing is going to convince you about it. It's a game that knows what it is, it knows what it wants to go for, and it executes upon that. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it is divisive because of it.
Yeah, yeah. So how much is it on the Vita?
I want to say it's like under a tenner. It's not a huge amount of money either way. And it's as far as I can tell, it's like a really small team. It might even just be Jeff Minter making it in his on his farm. but it is a real spectacle. It is worth going and seeing. It's worth either convincing a friend to buy it and you play a version of theirs, or kind of seeing some old videos of Tempest and Tempest 2000s. And if that looks like something you'd be interested in, then just pick it up because it is a brilliant version of that.
Okay, fair enough. All right, then. I'm going to talk very quickly about In Fear I Trust, which is a survival horror game that was released a few weeks back. I've been catching up on it. We put the review live on AppSpy today. It's already up on PG. And I don't like it.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm kind of used to being disappointed by survival horror at this point. The genre's taken somewhat of a nosedive in the past 5 years or so. I mean, it's difficult with survival horror because it's so much based on an emotional response. And what's happened to games and cinema recently is that we've kind of ditched the creepy sense of psychological dread that comes from this kind of pervasive sense of unease for just kind of creeping up behind you. We've swapped that for that kind of quiet, quiet, quiet bang thing, which is what Paranormal Activity and all those movies kind of instigated, where it's just there's lots of quietness and then something goes boom or a door slams shut and that's horror now.
And then there's that violin, kring.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, yeah, all right. That's not horror. That's just shock. And those things are entirely different. In the case of In Fear I Trust, admirably, it's not trying to do that. It's trying to go for psychological horror. It's got one of the most generic plot lines ever, because you start off with plot essential amnesia, as always. You wake up in a hospital not knowing where you are. You have to escape. No one's really there. You go into a room. There's this gigantic operation apparatus machine thing, which performs surgery. You can see it on the screenshots and everything. It's not a spoiler. And you're basically trying to find a way out of this complex, find out why you were there in the first place. You have to solve puzzles in order to get out, and to help you solve these puzzles, you have to use a kind of alternative vision. Like, you basically pinch the screen outwards, so you swipe both thumbs outwards, and it goes into kind of like, what would be detective mode if you were playing Batman, Arkham Asylum or something? And in that mode, you can suddenly see things that appear on the wall, so glyphs that are on the wall in this kind of hazy way. You might see the ghost of someone who was previously inhabiting the place, doing something horrible or imparting some useful wisdom. And it'll also show you areas to highlight, so it's a useful thing to go into. However, if you stay in it for too long, you start to go mental. Your breathing starts to kind of race and negative effects start happening and the screen starts jittering and things. So it's doing that sort of sanity mechanic that you see, which was pulled from Cthulhu originally and then employed in games like Amnesia, where if you look directly at something scary, the screen goes mental and it blurs and you can't see what you're doing. And that's the way of sort of imparting fear to you, to tell you something scary. Also, Slender Man used it as well to good effect. But even Slender Man is kind of quite bleh. And that's what that is. And it works. Yeah. It works as a game to make you go, whoa, and jump. But in terms of creeping psychological dread, And what In Fear I Trust suffers from is it's bogged down by nasty controls, dual stick controls. It's a first person game, and the guy walks around so slowly, and even with the speed slider turned up full, he doesn't turn around quick enough, so that's awkward and unpleasant to control. The puzzles are not engaging whatsoever. It's mostly door locks and stuff like that. There have been a couple of bits that have involved, for example, one involves a weighing scale, and you have to put the right kind of potion vials onto it to make the correct weight, which is flawed in so many ways, I can't even begin to tell you. Because just at a basic conceptual level, he's not adding weights to it. He's adding these vials of liquid. And they've like different vials, and they've all got a number on them, and they're all of different sizes. And obviously the idea is to find all the vials scattered around the room and then place them on the weighing scales until it balances out perfectly. But then they're liquid vials. And you have to find the right sized one, because like, oh no, this one's too big, it's too heavy. It's like, well, just take the big one and pour some out.
That sounds so tedious.
It's a dull thing anyway. It looks like a really bad replication of some of the puzzles that are in the room. And the room too, which is always a bad thing to echo because they've done it so well, the room and the room too. So to try and I'm not saying they copied it because they clearly didn't, but it could have been pulled from that. It's like a crap version of one of those puzzles. But just like a basic conceptual level, it's not even solid objects, it's liquid. Like you just take the big one and pour some out. No one's thought this through. In fairness to them, they are trying to go for psychological stuff, so you'll walk in and ghosts will be hovering in the room, and then they'll vanish and disappear, and you'll hear creepy stuff echoing around, and it's not all combat or anything like that. They are just going for a sense of atmosphere, and that is to be commended. However, the kind of mediocre puzzles and the nasty controls, it doesn't really work for me. And despite a couple of cool little set pieces, I wasn't overly impressed. If you're a huge survival horror fan, you might go for it, and you'll see past those flaws to enjoy some of the atmosphere, but it doesn't really stand up for me, I'm afraid. So you can get it right now. I think it's about £2.99, I think of that. But be warned, it's a 2.2 gigabyte game.
Whoa there, Mowgli.
Yeah, and that's a bit much. IMO. Which brings us to the end of this intensively feature-packed podcast. I think we crammed a lot in there, into an hour.
Yeah, we did.
I'm quite pleased with that. Good stuff. Well, we'll be back on track from next week. Hopefully Keith will be joining us as well, and as will Peter. So come back. We'll have lots more for you on the podcast. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye.